This is life coming full circle. Because Lenny was at my Women We Admire talk in the 08-09 academic year. So I could take the entire hour to introduce Linda, and I will not. Because we really want to hear from Linda. You do not need to hear from me. So there's just a few things I want to bring up. And one is to actually quote from Linda's official biography page, because I want to know how you get to put this on your official biography page. During her 27 years of service in the UC system, Williams earned a reputation as a highly capable and personable administrator. Okay, how many people do we know who get both of those adjectives? Highly capable and personable. In addition to championing improved relations between the university and its staff and faculty and students, okay, that's another rarity, all three groups, Williams was instrumental in the university's efforts to build strong ties with a range of community groups, nonprofits, and organizations outside of the UC sphere. Now, every single person in this room benefited from two of those that I've been involved in that Linda did. One was establishing the President's Advisory Committee on the Status of Women. So we literally, singularly need to thank Linda for putting this organization together, for establishing it with real bylaws, a budget from the President, making sure it was engraved in stone, come hell or high water. Okay, that was Linda. The other one that Linda did was the System-Wide Advisory Committee on the Status of Women. And I was in the Let's Get Together from all the individual campus committees about a decade before, and we just organized ourselves, and then, of course, it fell apart because somebody actually has to take the lead. So Linda took the lead and put it back together as a system-wide committee, which benefits every campus, including those that don't really have campus committees still. The third is that Linda, personally and directly, is responsible for having staff advisors to the Board of Regents. So these are three areas in which my life would be very different, and I've served in all those roles, and not staff region, but working with them as the Senate rep.
And none of it out to me.
Yeah, and it would be very different. We would literally not even be in this room together today. So you probably really should have been the first Women We Admire speaker, but there's no way we could have gotten on our calendar back then. It took to having Linda retire for us to get us here today, and we are so grateful for it.
Oh, thank
so thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
We've kissed and hugged a couple times already.
Well, Mary, thank you so much as always.
On, right? Yeah.
Hello. Yes, it is. It's on.
Probably don't need it, but I'll use it since there's folks on the phone and other places like that. So, first of all, let me say I'm honored and humbled to be here today. It is a wonderful opportunity to come in the room and be in a room with such powerful and dynamic women, which is all of you in this room and our gentlemen who are here with us. Hey, we appreciate you representing and being here because we need you too as we continue in our journey and the work that we do. So I just want to thank PacSol for inviting me to come and to speak, and to especially thank Alicia and Aaron, who are in the room, who did a lot of the work to make this all happen. So thank you. Appreciate that. When I was invited to come and speak, I was told that maybe I could come and share a little bit about my personal and professional experiences and any of the obstacles that I've overcome in my 27 and a half years at the University of California and share some life and career experiences. And so they said I had about 45 minutes that I could talk, and then we'd do 15 for Q&A. And I thought, no, that's not going to work. And so I'm going to modify this a little bit. I will talk and share some things with you. It's not going to be 45 minutes. You don't want to hear me talk for 45 minutes. I don't want to hear me talk for 45 minutes. So I want to have a conversation at the end because I think what's most important where the fun is having that conversation through Q&A and engaging and talking and me being for real. So that's where we can have some fun. I'm not going to also cover my 27 and a half years, and I keep throwing that happening. Look at here. When you've been and you've seen, you don't lose no time, okay? You take all your time in. You got that. So I'm not going to talk about my career, my path forward. If you read my bio, it started as an AA2, and then the rest is history. And I did spend 5 years here at Office of the President, so you see me hugging on and seeing a lot of people. A lot of you I knew from here and since my and throughout my career and my time. I did my time here. No, I'm just kidding. I actually did my 5 years here, and I have to say to you, being on two campuses, I was on the San Diego campus for 16 years and Cal for 8, there is not another experience other than being here at the Office of the President that you can garner what it means to be in the UC system and how you connect all those various dots. It's not a campus. It's not intended to be a campus. But I think I know, at least for me personally and professionally, coming here, having that experience of being here helped me understand some different dynamics that I just absolutely know I could not have acquired sitting at San Diego or sitting at Cal. So I'm pleased to be back and certainly have a lot of absolute appreciation for my time here. And then 27 years in UC would take a long time to talk about. We'd have to have a pajama party. Hang out for a minute, because you couldn't cover it in any period of time that's called 45 minutes, an hour, or 2 days in 45 minutes. It just doesn't happen that way. And so I want to say that there's a lot that happened during that time, and the Lord knows it, to say the least. I've had many facets of my journey where I learned some real critical thinking that I want to talk about. For those of you who know me, I'm a spiritual woman. I don't separate that out from who I am because it's who I am. It has been a part of how I got to where I tell my story. It has been my anchor as a woman. And a lot of times when people say, "How you doing?" I say, "I woke up this morning. It's a good day." Because that actually is the beginning of my blessings, and the rest is filler. If you really kind of peel it back a little bit, that's sometimes how it goes, if not all the time. And then I try to live it in such a way that says that when I get up each morning and I put my feet on the ground, that's when the devil says, "Oh, crap, she's up." Because I'm going to try to shake up a few things if I can. And I'll talk a little bit about where I go from here, meaning here, UC. Right now, I'm not doing nothing. Let me just, you know, we'll talk about that some more. But right now, I'm not doing anything. And I truly believe that from my world and my space that, you know, God can turn a mess into a message, a test into a testimony. I got many of those, a trial into a triumph, and a victim into a victory. And that is important for me because I've been in all those spaces a few times. Some on my own, of course. Some I got pushed over there, but I managed to get back out on the other side. And I'll say a little bit about that. One day I was reading one of my daily words, and it was the greatest little thing, and you know, saying, "Lord, you know, I got up this morning, I haven't done anything wrong, I haven't said anything wrong, I haven't punched anybody, I haven't kicked anybody, I didn't make a bad face, but I'm about to get out of this bed, so let's hope that the rest of the day can stay as good as it has been thus far." And that's, I mean, if you think about it, once you get up and you begin to engage, and it's engaging with people, once you begin to engage is when some of the real, you know, issues, let's say, you get tense. That's when things start to get created. So, you know, getting up and getting on and moving through the day, there's a lot to say about that. When I thought about the two areas I'd like to talk about and focus on, I thought about two. One is courage, and the other is know who you are. And those two things have been critical for me in just so many different ways. Some of those things I learned by my own experience. Some of it I learned by watching others. And I don't believe you have to experience it to learn it. You know, it's kind of like I don't have to touch the fire to know that I'm going to get burnt by the fire, so to speak. And so those are the two areas that I'm going to focus most of my comments about, and then we'll have some more conversations later about things you might want to hear about. One of the things that I think about courage that I think is really critical and important is you got to speak truth. You just got to do it. And some folks don't want to hear it, especially at some of the levels that I was at. They just don't want to hear it. We would prefer if we didn't have that conversation, or you know, different things of that sort, of that nature. And in my job at that time, I really had to talk about truth quite a bit. And I did it, I tried to do it, and I think I was successful most of the time, in doing it in such a way that it wasn't intended to be putting off of somebody. It wasn't intended to call somebody on the carpet sometimes. It wasn't intended to make people, you know, like back up and fall back off of what you were saying. It was more intended to hopefully come to a better place in the conversation that we would acknowledge what it is that we really wanted to talk about. Because if you don't get there and you don't talk about that, the rest, we just spin it. And that was my experience, at least sitting at some of the tables that I sat at. For some of you, at my retirement party, Chancellor Dirks, if you haven't met Chancellor Dirks, you know, I was surprised he did this, so I'm just going to say it. But there were two phrases that have been pretty popular that go with Linda Williams. One is hail to the no, said it all the time. And the other is calling the elephants in the room. So at my retirement party, he literally said, well, I learned from Linda Williams how to say hail to the no. And his neck was moving and all that. I was like, whoa, that was scary, dude. But he actually nailed it. I was actually quite impressed. But I say why those two phrases became important for me in my career is because it was sometimes that was the only way you got the attention of the room. And so then the other one is calling the elephant in the room. And I have sat in many a conversations around a table, sometimes being the only woman, sometimes being the only person of color, sometimes being both of those. And I'm watching herds just marching through the room, just running around. And I'm thinking, maybe I'm the only one that sees that. And I'm going to see how things go for a minute. And then I just realized, no, I'm not the only one who sees it, but I'm probably going to be the only one maybe in this instance is going to say something about it. And so usually it was hail to the no and then call an elephant in that order. Sometimes it was the reverse order. But the reason it was important is because that goes back to speaking truth. If we're just not going to say what really is, we're not going to get to where we say we want to be. And it's easy to say the words. It's harder to do the work. It just really is. And that's for all of us. It's not any one person or a group of people. It's just harder to do the work if we don't speak our reality and our truth to what it is. And being on two campuses, and Cal in particular, Cal's a tough campus. And you really have to just kind of go, wait, hold on. That is not what we said we wanted to do, or we said we wanted to do it and we're not. That's not what we said yesterday. Are we changing our mind today? I just need clarity because I just want to know which way you want me to go with this. I don't want to falsely represent what you said you wanted to do, but at the same time, I don't want to be a person that didn't want to be a person that would go out there and represent something that people are looking at me like, you know, doggone well, that's not what you guys said, or that's not what you're doing as leaders. And so it's important to get the integrity behind it so that folks would really appreciate and think about and talk about where we wanted to go. When we had, and all of us are dealing with multiple issues around climate on our campuses, different things, you got to talk about that. You got to have the conversation. You got to talk about it. You got to speak the truth. You got to say, what do we want to do differently? We got to look at what we did before, what worked, what didn't. But it really is about just really bringing it back home and speaking about it. We had a lot of hard conversations during our sexual assault time, which we're still in, but just hard conversations about what does that mean as a campus? How are we going to mandatorily do anything? Which, for some reason, it's the hardest damn thing in this institution to mandatorily do anything. I mean, just make it mandatory.
It's the M word.
Yeah. It's just, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
And it's been amazing forever. And I just think, how do we get from here to there? Because it's nice to say we'd like to have it done, but if we don't make it mandatory, but then also if we don't have accountability behind what we say we want to do, then we still don't get there. So there was a lot of conversations, some really hard conversations in cabinet about how to do that and where to go and how to make it happen. And so being at a place of speaking those two things going forward, when I was younger, in my 20s, my mother had said to me one time, sharing with her, and I don't remember the exact subject matter, and she said to me, well, if something is that intentional, you know, if something is that stupid, it's intentional. When I was 20, I wasn't clocking in everything. I was like, yeah, okay, I kept moving on. But then I came to realize that is really true. Because you could not, that had to be intentional. That's just totally crazy. That doesn't make any sense. So if you did it, then it's intentional, then I'm going to have to call you on it and say, what does that mean? What did you really want to do with that? What did you not want to do with that? And where are we going to go with it going forward? And I've said that to a few people. Some people appreciated it. There's others who didn't. I won't use any initials or anything like that. But it was truth. Again, speaking truth to power. And then one thing I also learned, I read something one time, and it says, you know, bless the gifts that come wrapped in sandpaper. And I thought, yeah, there's a few. And they usually make you a little raw in different places. But at the end of the day, you walk away having learned a lot. And I have learned a lot in 27 and a half years. I have learned when to understand when something is about me and it isn't. And that's another thing that I think sometimes that we find ourselves in where we're trying to understand why is that what it is and how does that really impact me and how doesn't it and how do you deal with it? Because sometimes situations have nothing to do with you, but they become about you. There's a local media outlet. For those of you who've been around for a minute, you probably know what I'm talking about. Well, that ain't got nothing to do with me. But okay, we're going to play that game today, and I'm going to go with it and ride it out. But I say that because if you've been through tough times in your career, and if you have a career and you get in leadership, you will go through it one way or another. You're either going to fall into it, step into it, get pushed into it, swim out of it, but you're going to have it, and it's just how it is. And I think it's more about how you get out of it and what you do on the other side of it than standing in it and going, okay, well, what the hell? You know, here it is, and trying to pick it apart and trying to do something else with it. I think one of the other things on the courage that I had to learn as I think about it is that failure is not an event. It's only an opinion. And it really doesn't matter a whole lot if it's not yours. I mean, just seriously, right? Because as individuals, you know, we have to kind of keep moving. We have to keep stepping forward. Most of the time, I learned something, you know, there's your story, my story, and then the truth. That's how it works out, I mean, right? And it could be that it's a blend of it, or it could have been one or the other. But at the end of the day, that is really where it all comes together. And so long as we don't, and I don't do this. I had to learn not to do this, just to be very honest with you. I don't want to rehash the past, and I don't want to rehearse the future. I don't know what the hell's coming in the next minute, five, or next day. And I live from a place of gratitude, and it says, wherever I am is where I'm supposed to be. And I live with every exit, and my life has been an entrance into a new place. That's where I'm supposed to be. So people are like, you're retiring. Why are you retiring? You're retiring too young. I don't know who came up with that line. Yeah. Don't believe it. There's really no such thing as too young to retire. I thought, damn, that's the case. I'd be in bad shape. So, but, you know, no, I really felt that I had done all that I needed to do in my career attached to UC in its walls of UC. That doesn't mean that I'm still not committed to higher education, public education in particular, but the work that I needed to do here, I've done it. And I'm happy about being able to know I can close that door, and I don't have to feel like I got to walk back through it to determine who I'm going to be or what I'm going to be and where I'm going to go next. It just, it's a different kind of a feeling of being able to just not rehearse the future and fret about it and worry about it. And at the end of the day, when I've gone through and we all go through our own experiences of life, some of it get easy, some of it not, you know, you just want to get through it with grace and ease, however much grace you can get through it with ease. And having colleagues and having friends, I used to say, I did throughout my entire career, and some of y'all in this room, so you know who you are, there were people who helped me not lose my job that day because I was about ready to go out. You know, I didn't want to go out without, you know, God, I was like, I don't want, you know, UCPD come take me because it's not a good moment right now. So I have people, I call them on the phone, and they go, you don't sound good. I am not good right now. Okay, hold on. And they, you know, come to the phone, and we'd have to talk it through because I didn't understand sometimes if it was my issue, their issue, or both of us. And I needed to sort that out. I needed to do it with a trusted friend, somebody who would tell me, yeah, Linda, you, okay, how are we going to fix this? That's where I wanted to go because it wasn't about making anybody right or wrong, but I just needed to know where I was. And good friends, colleagues, however you classify them, will tell you that. They, Mary and I and many others in this room have had good conversations about our realities on days that somehow it just seemed to be a fog over the situation that I was going through. The other thing I'll say about courage, as I kind of wrap this up a little bit, is fear is the opposite of courage and should have no place in our managing and planning for our success equation. But that's hard. There's a lot of changes. I don't remember, I don't remember a non-turbulent time in Houston. I thought you said that I have you. Did anybody, well, maybe there, I'm sure there was one. I just missed it. It didn't come across my desk. My desk came, a lot of stuff came across my desk, but just turbulence of different things. You can't be, you know, just the best public research enterprise in the world and not have it, so you understand that. But it seems as though when you feel like we felt like we were coming out of something, it was just, you know, there we go on the roller coaster ride to get on something else. And so, you know, as you think about life and think about that, you're going to have fear in the context of it. Change is always going to occur. So here comes fear sometimes, too. So it's really trying to manage it and not have it. Acronym, the one I use, and that you can think about it, you can look at fear one of two ways. Forget everything and run, or face everything and rise. You can do one of the two. You blending them all up and do a couple things. But the point of the matter is, I think that it's not that you won't have fear. It's about how do you overcome it, how do you get through it to the other side of whatever it is that you're experiencing at the moment. Sometimes you will have friends who can help you, and sometimes there are friends who cannot help you. Just saying. And you've got to be able to understand how you want to manage those two worlds. It's not that they're not your friends and good people, but sometimes they are not the people to help you move through that. And I remember when I went through a few moments of that, and I have a mentor, and I was speaking to him, and it was one of the most interesting conversations. It was actually my transition out of Office of the President, and I was thinking like, oh Lord, where are we gonna do? What's this gonna be? And I was speaking to this person over breakfast, and I had anxiety. They didn't. I guess they didn't need it, but I had my own anxiety. And in talking with them, it pointed out something to me that I had never thought about, and it was about how do you manage transition. Because a lot of times it's being managed for you. You're not managing it. It's being managed for you. And there's a big distinction between it being managed for you and you managing it. And so if there's anything, when you think about your careers and you think about where you want to go next, and when you think about it, even you should have a plan, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Whether you have to implement it today, tomorrow, in 2 years, you should always be working towards what this transition look like. It could be transition to a new job, transition to a new system, transition to retirement. But whatever it is, you should have a plan for about what you want to do and how do you want to get there and thinking about it. And when you keep fear in perspective, you make room for joy because you only let so much of it in. Because I tell people, people say, oh, I work 150%, 200%. There is no such thing. You work 100%. Now, you may give yourself, that be you, only 5%. You may only give your family or whoever else 5%. And the work may get 90%. But there is really only 100%. So if you inflate it to 100 or 150 and 200, you thinking, oh, I got all this extra time that I'm – no, you're not. Mm-mm. No, something happened. You didn't enjoy something. You're not feeling well. You're not paying attention to your health. You're not enjoying the things you like to do in your life. It's just the truth about it. So you really have to think about how do I keep certain things in this corner, and then how do I allow other things, grace, joy, peace, all of that to come into my life. The second thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is to know who you are. And there was a quote by Mark Twain, I'm sure many of you have heard it before, the two most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. I know, actually. It took 30 years. Thank God I finally got there. But it did. It took a while for me to understand what my purpose is here on earth. And it's to empower. That's it. It's not complicated. It's not all fancy. It's not a long sentence. It doesn't have 18 pages to it. it's empower others. That was it. Easy. Every time when I do it, I just feel my spirit move around it. So I learned that. And once I learned it and I accepted it, it was great. And sometimes what I also had to learn in that was, what does that really mean, empowering? It doesn't mean that I change some big policy somewhere, somehow, all the time. That's not it. I could have been walking down the street, exchanged a great smile with somebody, and we each felt different at that particular moment. I could tell you some stories about that, but that would take me off track. But it can be that simple. But it is about empowering other people. I'll say this, and I truly believe it. I have actually this plaque on my wall at home, and someone came in the other day and said, "Why am I not surprised that's on your wall?" I'm like, "Hey, you know, we'll live with it." And it says, "The woman who does not require validation from anyone is the most feared individual on the planet." I don't require validation from anybody. I just don't. I love people. I'm a lovable person. But I don't need anybody to validate me. And I don't think any of us do, regardless if we're women or men, because at the end of the day, you know who you are. And if you're doing the right thing, you know it in your heart. It's not, I don't need anybody to tell me I'm doing the right thing. I know if I'm doing the right thing. I also know when I'm not doing the right thing. Okay? And I'm hoping that I'm making the right adjustments when I'm not doing the right thing. As women, I believe that we have to be tough. Well, we sure as hell have to proceed to be tough. If we got to pull it up from our baby toe, we have to own our own power. And I've watched myself, and I've watched other women give power away so easily. Just throwing it down in the hall. It's gone. And I'm like, why do you do that? And I don't think it's a consciousness all the time. I think that some of it has just been what we are familiar with around us and the environments that we're in, how people talk to us, what they say, what they don't say, that we take that and therefore it becomes an essence of who we think we are, and we don't have the power to do various things. And sometimes that finds its way back to fear. And so if we're fearful of something, we're afraid to have power in it. Being authentic, I think one of the things I will say is that, as you heard Mary talk about my work at Cal, and it was the same at San Diego, I was authentic in who I was and talking to student, staff, and faculty all the time. I didn't play games with them. I said what I knew and what I thought. Worked towards how to fix something, not just complain about it, but stayed authentic to who I am, what I wanted to be about. Because I think when people know who you are, then they'll decide if they really trust you or not. And if they don't know who you are, then they don't know if they can trust you. If they can trust you, then they'll talk to you. They'll tell you things. People say, "How do you got a? I have a posse that was running around the campus. Giddy up, giddy up." I mean, just a posse of people who would come call me, "Linda, blah 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 blah." Okay, but yeah, my phone's okay. And they would just tell me things. So the chancellor would say, "How do you know that? How did you get that information from this way when we've got a posse? I got people telling me what they think, what's going on." Here's the deal. Even if they are wrong, there's a problem because there's too many people talking about wrong. So we still got a problem to go fix it so they know what's right. Doesn't matter. It's a win on that, even though it may be wrong. I don't know if any, how many of you know of Carla Harris? Yeah. She's phenomenal. She has a couple of books out. But one of the things, she's a phenomenal woman who's been around for years in the financial realms, just reached the pinnacle of being out there in a place that typically women aren't in. And she happens to be African-American, and so that was even another one. But, yes, in the Delta. So sorry. Let me recognize Delta's in the room. But one of the things that she shared that I thought was really important, and I had to think about it even at this point in my life, was that she talked about bringing all of yourself to the table. If you ever heard her speak, she says, bring all of who you are to the table, not just one facet of it. And she spoke about the fact that she's a renowned gospel singer. And people started saying, "Oh, I know you sing gospel," and she's singing, and she's like, "I didn't want people to know me for that. I wanted people to know about this thing that I was had done in the financial realm." But then what she realized was that people got to know her, they appreciated her, and that gospel part was a connector. So then she talked about other things that she was like. So she said, "All of us are multifaceted. We got a lot of things that we are. you never know which one of those things is going to be the thing to connect you in the room with people. You just never know, because many of you, as much as you may have heard, read about me, trust me, there's a whole bunch you don't know, and you probably won't. And then there's a lot about each of you that we don't know. But you'll be surprised that if you get in the room and you say something about this, or you're talking with people, and it doesn't matter if you're in the room and this is a, you know, it's a meeting. She learned that in what she taught. I thought it was so powerful, was that you're talking with people, and all of a sudden she had a connection in her conversations now with people that she needed a connection with that her other colleagues didn't. So when she began to want to engage with them, they went to her because they had that connection. So bring our full selves to the room. We are just some wonderful individuals as human beings. We have experiences of our past. We have been through different things together. Mary and I have learned each other and stuff about where we've been. Gwen and I, many of you in the room. When you talk about it, then you know. If you don't talk about it, people don't know. And this is how we grow. And it's also how you get empathy with other people when you learn about who they are. Because then I can say, wow, I didn't know you had been through that. Or I didn't know you had experience in that. And so she talked about bringing that into the room around who we are as people. Another quote, and I'm going to read it so I don't mess it up, but T.D. Jakes is a pastor in Dallas, and he has a huge church called the Potter's House. But I was reading one of his books, and it said this, and I always come back and refer to it, and there's four things in it that stand out for me. But it says, she lives in a generation where the glass ceiling has been turned into a glass slipper. If she has the courage to believe, nothing shall be impossible for her. I want her to know that there are not limitations, even when there have been past mishaps and agonies. This is a new day with new opportunities. She may have to rest sometimes, and I'm going to come back and talk about resting. Pray sometimes, we're going to talk about that. Forgive sometimes, it's a very powerful thing. And sometimes, yes, even fight. But like Cinderella, the shoe fits where. And the reason those phrases of rest and pray and forgive and fight are important for me, and I share that since it's about my story, is that they are relevant in our personal lives, but they're also relevant in our professional lives. Because sometimes things happen, they're not intentional. And if we can move to a place of forgiving, we do need to rest. A very powerful thing, particularly for women to do, who sometimes become that sandwich generation, and we all know what that means when we're trying to do multiple things and wear multiple hats in it. And sometimes you just got to sheer fight. And it will look different, sound different, depending on who you're fighting with and what you're fighting about. But sometimes you just got to step out there and put it up and say that you're going to have to take it on. And make it happen. I also feel that when you're on the right path towards your purpose in life is when you feel the most powerful. That's why I felt in my career I'm okay, because I felt that I've been constantly moving towards and being about helping to empower others. And so I felt very comfortable in that, very stable in it, and all that goes with it. Now, one of my colleagues in the room said this at another women's leadership event, and I thought it was fantastic. It says, when juggling life's balls in the air, don't let the glass ones drop. That could be children, family, whatever you know will shatter if it drops. The rubber ones you can catch on the bounce. Anybody know who said that? This one person in the room does, lady sitting right here, Mary. She said at a women's conference, and I thought it was so powerful because it's true. We're always throwing, it's always, this is constant with balls in the air. And there are those ones that we just should not let drop. Because once they shatter, trying to put them back together, it's impossible. Even if you get big pieces of glass, they still not going to look like they were before they shatter. Let's just be real. Right? This is not going to happen. And the ones on the bounce, you know, I'm a little OCD. Mm-hmm, who knew? And so, yeah, I want the kitchen always cleaned up when I go to bed. And you know, certain things that I just want done. It's like, let that ball bounce, go on to bed and rest. Just do something, you know. So that was, Mary, thank you. I just wanted to say, I wanted you to know I never forgot that when I heard you share that with us. And then I just want to say about resting, take care of yourself. Go to zero. I used to talk with a lot of my girlfriends before in that cab. I go to zero. I'm like, what does zero mean? I have to turn the knob all the way down, to zero. Just, and we don't do that. We even go 50%, and we think we're humming. I'm down. You know, I'm on vacation. Mm-mm. Most of us have the cell phone, the email. We have something going, and we don't turn it down to zero. What do they say about a battery on a phone? When you let it fully, you know, lose all of its juice, when you recharge it, it's more powerful. The same mentality. And we have gotten so used to doing so much, all the balls in the air, managing them all, doing everything. We really just don't take care of ourselves nearly the way, I believe, that we want to. Or should, because we are managing just way too much at one time. And when you take care of yourself, you have room to help take care of others. I can be a better coach. I can be a better sister. I can be a better father, better partner, better whatever, if I have something in my tank to give. If I'm just used up, overspent, you're probably not going to get the best of me. Even though I tell you you are, you're probably just not getting the best of me. So, just, and you have to consciously say that to yourself. It's not that you'll just go do it. When I was still working, when I took a vacation, I had to literally tell myself, I'm going to zero. And I did whatever I could to make zero happen. And we can do it. The world will not explode if you turn that cell phone, that email off. I know folks want y'all to believe that. Trust me. I haven't seen anybody blow up yet. It just doesn't happen, okay? And it's harder because of technology to do those kinds of things. And I've watched some people really crash and burn because they just don't know how to turn it off. When I was working, I turned my cell phone off when I got home. Here's what I thought. If you really needed me, you should know how to reach me if I turn my cell phone off. If you didn't have that kind of information, you didn't really need me. That was the truth. I really believe it. You either got my home phone number or you don't. And if you don't have it, that means you did not reach the bar. I wish you needed to bother me once I left the hell up out of here. Nothing blew up. I'm telling you, nothing blew up. When they needed me, I'm so sorry to call you at home. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about? Yeah. It was important enough. But if you didn't do that, it's very easy to just reach out and touch someone when they really didn't want to be touched. Okay, I said enough about that. All right. So let me close. We're going to have about 10 minutes left, and I apologize. I said I was going to give you more time, and I didn't. But in closing, I want to encourage all of us to do this. Live by choice, not by chance, to make changes, not excuses, to be motivated, not manipulated, to be useful, not used, to excel, not compete, to choose self-esteem, not self-pity, to choose to listen to our inner voice, not the random opinions of others. Thank you. So I'm open to questions. We've got about 10 minutes or so. So any questions? I'll answer you as honestly as I can.
You got one here.
Hey. Can you say your name for me?
I'm Allie Gardner. I'm from Easy Town,
Barbara. Oh, hi.
And so I'm probably like the youngest one in the world.
Do you think I want to challenge you? But go ahead, girl.
But I'm just wondering, for those of us still trying to find ourselves, do you have any suggestions about how to pursue doing that? If you have lots of interest, and there's lots of paths in which you want to pursue, how do you figure out which way to go?
So from someone who came through the ranks starting as an AA2 back then, oh my God, I'm sure you did something, there were some more clear paths. You know, you kind of went AA2, AA3, and then they changed things with career paths, which I actually think is not a bad thing, about how you move around and how you go. I think one of the most important things that you can do is go and talk to other people who are interesting to you. You might not even want to do what they do, if you even know what they do, because that's the other thing about talking to people. You actually find out what people really do, because they may look like they're doing this, but when you really go talk to them, they're doing that. That's what I used to tell people all the time. Look, let me tell you, I know that's what that is, but let me tell you what I really do. and do you really want to do this? But you should go and talk to people, and so that people can help you understand what are some of the options and interests that you have. And then once you do that, ask them how they moved around. And you could talk to four people doing the same thing, and they all could have done it a different way. That's the beauty of you learning kind of what that all means and how to make it happen. The other thing I would recommend is make sure people know who you are. And the way you do that is get involved. So I was sitting on committees. I was telling them, before I became an MSO, everybody knew I wanted to be an MSO. I didn't even really know totally what an MSO was. It just... But it sounded good. It looked like it had some really good things that I might be interested in doing. I was like, I want to be an MSO. I became an MSO. And that's when the woman called me. She said, I heard you want to be an MSO. I was like, oh, damn, somebody really heard. So now I got a mind to do something with this. But it's true. So you should talk to people, get to know other people, reach out, branch out, get involved. Get involved in this organization on your campus. Do you have one on your campus?
Yeah, you do.
Okay, cool. Get involved. You'll meet, network, and meet some other people. And then you'll begin to learn from the different divisions and the different areas. One of the myths I would like to dispel is the myth that when I was on a campus, and I think it's still hard to do, but I still think it's a myth. You know, if you start on the academic side, you can't go to the administrative side. If you start on the administrative side, they used to say you can't go to the dark side. If you're in academics, you don't go to the administrative side. You know, that don't even make any sense. Because I went to both. I went back and forth. But I actually was a real contributor to my success, because I understood why each other didn't like each other, so I could talk their language wherever I was at the time. But it's a huge environment. When you think about UC, you just think about your campus alone. There's just a wealth, I believe, of learning and opportunities. So stretch yourself out there, meet some people, talk to people, find out what's out there, and don't feel limited by wherever your space is right now. And ask your boss if there's something that they might do to help you pair up. One thing that we don't do anymore, we used to do in the UC system, is we used to have fellowships. And we used to create opportunities for people to go do stuff other places. And it was driven by money. I do believe that we could still do that. I think departments have to do it together. They don't, you know, if you're waiting for something to come off high, then they don't have it. But I think that those were opportunities where people could go and test the waters and feel safe in it. And it's harder to do that now than it used to be. Does that help a little bit? Okay, great. Hey.
How do we break the culture of this notion you have to go away to come back and move up? Because I've done that twice, and I don't think I'm going to go away. Mary, don't go away.
Thank you.
That's how I was able to move up quickly earlier in my career.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Away meaning the system.
Yeah. There's a lot more prevalence of that than it was back when I was coming through my career. And I'll be very honest with you and say I think it's on us. I think it's on the institution. It's on the UC system. We have some policies in place that I think is the dumbest policies I've ever heard in my life. And when I've done recruitments and I've tried to promote my people up and do everything, and, you know, you're trying to move this person into a much more significant job, I got a cap of 25%. I can't exceed. I'm going to call it. I know what you're talking about. You can take a cap of 25%. And the person's like, but if you go and hire that person out there, you're paying more than 25%. And the learning curve is a little different. I just think that's even really ridiculous, and it's been ridiculous for a long time. And I don't know when it's going to change. I'll just be very honest about it. I have no idea. It's been like that forever.
How do we work on changing that policy?
Say that again?
How do we work on changing that?
You know, I think that, you know, I said take it to the staff advisors. Take it and let them do it. They're sitting at the table with the regents, and take it to them. They're looking for some projects to take on. Do not tell them Linda Williams said, because I just talked to a few of them a week or so ago, and they're like, did you say? I'm like, But I mean, when you're thinking about it, it is a huge policy change, and so that's the place to take it. And I, you know what, and I'll say this, there's a lot of times people believe people are paying attention to certain things, and they really aren't. What I mean by that is, a lot of people say, well, I know the chancellor knows it. No, he doesn't. Didn't nobody tell him that? Now, why they didn't tell him is a different story. But the fact that is, he didn't know it. So do the regents know? Is there data and analysis that says, let's look at the trend associated with how many employees we've lost and who've come back over time? I'm not trying to put anybody in the room. I don't know what nobody does up in here, but I'm just saying,
is that kind of data done? Because we can't compete on the salary scale. It just, it's ridiculous to think that we can. And we're losing talent after talent after talent after talent. Phenomenal people. Just because they didn't want to leave. But, I mean, everybody's trying to feed the kids and pay them more. You know, people don't do what they got to do. So, but I would say, where is there a voice? I'd say, you know, Mary knows, you know, a lot of conversations take place in hallways at the Regents meeting. I pay less attention to what they're saying at that table. I'm watching who's going out the door together. But, yeah, at lunch. So they could, you know, hopefully and maybe, you know, start stirring that up a little bit. And I don't know if it's been brought up before, so I won't say that it hasn't. I don't know. But I would say that's a place to start.
You're welcome.
Hi.
I'm Sean.
Speak up just a little bit.
Did you get to be known as a woman who speaks the truth and called out the elephant in the room? How have you managed to make sure that you're still invited to those rooms?
That's a really great question.
So I've been blessed and fortunate enough to be at a table where I couldn't be uninvited.
But the reason for what I say that is because then you want to make sure you get the table. So getting at the table is critical. I mean, if I speak the truth and Champ wants to throw me out of the cabinet, we're going to have a real conversation about that, right? But getting at the table to be that voice where people genuinely want you there. Because a lot of times we're there for different reasons. I mean, some of you may or may not. I was the first African-American woman to ever serve in the cabinet in Cal's history. That was 147 years old. Something's wrong with that picture. I'm just going to say it. And so, you know, when you think about voices at a table, really? Something's wrong there. So I think when people really want the truth and want to hear it, they will invite you back. If they don't, you probably don't want to go back. Just want to say that. You might just say, peace, double deuce, as my daughter would say. It's okay. You can continue to live in this fallacy because you won't move where you want to go. It just is inevitable. I've watched us talk about things and then go back that way. Talk about it and go back that way. And it's like, do we really want to go there or do we really want to do something different? So it's not easy to do. I remember when I was up here, there were times when... folks would be talking about stuff around the table. I was in the president's office. And I wouldn't say anything. And it was freaking people out. She gonna say something? I'd wait a little while. Sometimes I just play the game. You know, wait, make them just wait it out a little bit. And finally, I would say something. But what I appreciated about that is they did expect that if I had something to say, they wanted to hear it and they wanted to listen to it. I knew that, and therefore, I felt that I was in a position to be able to speak the truth. And so, therefore, I did. You're welcome. Any other questions? A couple of minutes left. Hi.
My name is Daniel Bajola. I'm with Financial Accounting and the Capital Project. I just want to say thank you again. Thank you for coming. The last time that we had to speak, I left with some really profound messages and information. And it's an honor to meet with you again and to hear you talk again because I have 3 pages of notes.
Okay.
And they're small pieces of paper. But I really appreciate you telling your story because someone who, such as myself, I left the private sector at, you know, more of a senior role and then coming into D.C., definitely starting, you know, back from the bottom. And to the woman's question is when I had the opportunity to bug your office, it took me 2 months to get that appointment. No apologies necessary. But it really provided me with an opportunity to understand and to learn what, you know, a person, a woman in a position that I admired, it allowed me to really understand what it was you did and how you got there. And so it's great that you continue to give back to the community.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'll just close on the idea that, you know, we should be about mentoring and sharing our stories. I mean, you don't have to do it this way. It could be one-on-one, two-on-one, three-on-one. But I think you have to find those individuals that you really want to share because all of us have stood in a place of not knowing.
how that's going to work out, how is that going to feel, what's going to happen if I do that. And all of us could have had different outcomes to what the experience might be. But having someone to go and talk to, making ourselves available, all of us in here should be mentors to other people. Find a mentee. My mentor was out of the university. That was really important for me. But have someone you can go and talk to and bounce thoughts and ideas off, because there were things I just never would have learned if I hadn't done that. So I encourage all of us to fill those spaces, help each other, lift each other, and encourage. And I wish all of you much success. Thank you.